Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
Thank W.J. Pierce for creating and performing our music. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live. We're your hosts, Alistair Cross, and I'm here with my co-host and collaborator, Tamara Thorne. How are you today, Tamara?
I'm fine, Alistair, because we finished another episode of Raven Crest. I'm proud
of us.
We
did.
Are you proud of us?
Me too.
We did.
I am, yes.
We did. And it's full
All
of
right,
sex and violins. Yes.
Violin.
It is violin.
It's true. It
mm-hmm.
is actually.
Yeah, there was a lot of music in this one.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We're excited about tonight's guest. But before we introduce him, I'm going to turn it back over to Tamara, and she'll tell you actually a little bit more about what we're talking about as far as Ravencrest. So take it away, Tamara.
All right. We're talking about our third book in the Ravencrest saga, and in a remote part of California, Ravencrest Manor. Stone by stone from England, dark and unnatural powers, and drawing those it wants as its own. In Desecration, it has a title now, Book 3 of the Ravencrest Saga Exorcism, something evil is stirring in the deep dark waters of the estate's indoor pool as ghostly jazz age parties fill the air with phantom music. Within the mansion, a maid is visited nightly by a demon lover, and Governess Belinda Moreland is haunted by the tormented spirit of Violet LeBlanc, a silent movie star who was driven mad in her prime and wants Belinda to help her in her search for justice. The Ravencrest Saga series is first released in serialized installments. The first two episodes, Begotten and Incubus, are available now on Amazon. The third, Desecration, is coming very soon to an e-reader near you. Probably next week, right, Alistair?
I think so. All right, yeah, it should be next week. And very quickly, also, you can learn more about what we do at our websites, alistaircross.com and tamarathorne.com. You can visit our mutual blog at thornandcross.wordpress.com, or if you tweet, you can find us at @crossalistair and at @tamarathorne. You can also visit our Haunted Nights Live page on Facebook. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at authorsontheair.com. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. All right. That said, tonight's guest, Harold Schechter, is an American true crime writer who specializes in serial killers. He attended the State University of New York in Buffalo, where his PhD director was Leslie Fielder. I'm sorry. He is professor of American literature and popular culture at Queens College of the City University of New York. Schechter is married to poet Kimiko Han, and he has two daughters from a previous marriage, the writer Lauren Oliver and professor of philosophy Elizabeth Schechter. Welcome to the show, Harold. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Happy
Good.
To be
wow.
here.
Yes, we're happy to have you. I'm going to apologize right up front for the delay. There's a time lag, and it's really bad today, really bad. So I'm sorry if I plow over anybody or talk to over anybody. But anyway, we are thrilled, of course, to have you back. We always love having you. There are so many things we could talk about and probably will. But one thing that I'm particularly interested in is recently you had these Amazon singles. When we were looking through your credits, we found this. Could you tell us a little bit about those?
They are it's part of this actually new series called Amazon Original Stories, and these are short selections. Each one is meant to be read in a couple of hours. So I did a series of six different stories, each one focusing on a different, very sensational crime going back to the 1860s and extending up to the 1960s. The collection is called Bloodlands. And then, as I say, there are six different stories within it. I mean, they're nonfiction. It's not fictional stories. Each one is a nonfiction true crime narrative. Excuse me. And the first one, which is called, the first one is called The Pirate. And it's about a mass murderer named Albert Hicks, who slaughtered a shipload of people back in the 1860s. The second one is called Little Slaughterhouse on the Prairie, about the infamous,
love it.
infamous Bender family of Kansas. Partly it's called that because Laura Ingalls Wilder, who wrote the Little House on the Prairie series, she claimed in a late life memoir that her family had known the Benders when they were out on the Kansas prairies. She actually claimed that her father was part of the posse that tracked down the Benders after they absconded from their murder inn. Trying to remember all of them. There's one on called Panic, which was about this sex crime panic in the 1930s that was partly fueled by J. Edgar Hoover, when there were a number of very, very grisly pedophiliac murders, and the country was suddenly seized with this kind of hysteria that there were all these what they call degenerates on the loose. Then there's one called The Brickslayer, which is about an African-American serial killer who actually served as the basis for the character of Bigger Thomas in Richard Wright's famous novel Native Son. There's one on Charles Schmidt, the so-called Pied Piper of Tucson, who was a kind of early Charles Manson-like figure back in the 1960s, who attracted this group of teen acolytes and committed with their, with their assistance, a couple of very gruesome murders. So those are available on Kindle. So.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah. I want to talk about your latest book, Hell's Princess. That's a fascinating story. But before we get into that, I have a question. It's kind of a personal question. I discovered you. I saw you on one of those true crime shows on Netflix somewhere, I don't remember, and I was struck by you're just so calm and pleasant, and you don't. I'm wondering about the moment that you said to yourself, I think I'm going to devote my life to writing about mass murderers and serial killers and rapists. And
yeah.
How did this come to be?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I'm not sure there was a specific moment. And in fact, in many ways, it's somewhat of a surprise to me that I have ended up devoting my, a large chunk of my adult life to that particular pursuit. My day job for over 40 years, I actually just retired, was a professor of American literature. And of course, a lot of the material that I taught, Edgar Allan Poe and Nathaniel Hawthorne, Herman Melville, is very, very dark and gothic. I've always been, my sensibility and my imagination were shaped from childhood on by my exposure to all these horror movies and horror comics and so on. I'm a baby boomer, And there was just all, you know, that was just all the pop culture that I was growing up with. So, you know, I've certainly always been fascinated by and interested in horror as a genre, you know, and why we need horror, people need horror stories, you know, and why we need stories about monsters. But the way I got into becoming a true crime writer was, I mean, I had been actually writing, sort of supplementing my modest academic income by writing books on a variety of subjects. And at some point, I guess in the late 1980s, I'd actually been working on a book about movie special effects. And while researching that, you know, I came across the fact that both Psycho and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which, you know, two of my all-time favorite horror movies, had both been based on, you know, this actual case. And I began to research that, and that became my first book, Deviant, about Ed Gein. And while I was doing my research into the Gein story, I was I corresponded with Robert Bloch, who wrote the book Psycho that the movie was based on. And one of the questions I asked Bloch was, you know, why were people so fascinated with Ed Gein? And he replied, because they've forgotten about Alder Fish. And so, you know, that led me to start researching, you know, Albert Fish. And I wrote my second book, Deranged, about Fish. Anyway, one thing led to another, and before I knew it, you know, I had become kind of a specialist in, you know, in American, you know, American psycho killers.
Right.
So, but yeah, so, but, you know, in a way, it wasn't sort of a conscious decision. It was something that I a little bit, you know, stumbled upon, so...
Right.
And speaking of horror and all that, you've written at least one fiction novel, The Mask of Red Death, with
actually,
Edgar Allan Poe.
Actually, I've written six novels.
Oh wow!
I wrote what I think is quite a good horror novel under a pen name. It's a book called Dying Breath. And it was written under a pen name. That was called Dying Breath. And then I wrote another book, also I think quite good, called Outcry, which is a horror novel, the premise of which is that Ed Gein had an illegitimate son. But then I wrote the novel that you refer to, then I wrote four detective novels featuring Edgar Allan Poe as the protagonist.
Wow.
The Mask of Red Death was actually the second one. First one was called Nevermore, and then there was The Mask of Red Death, and then one called The Telltale Corpse. The second one was called Humbug. And in each of the novels, Edgar Allan Poe kind of meets and teams up with some historical figure that he was contemporary with. So in Nevermore, it's about Edgar Allan Poe and Davy Crockett.
I need to read these. They're so great.
They're quite good, actually. The Humbug is about Edgar Allan Poe and P.T. Barnum. The Telltale Corpse, The Mask of Red Death, was about Edgar Allan Poe and Kit Carson, and then The Telltale Corpse was about Edgar Allan Poe and Louisa May Alcott.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
You're hitting all my favorites.
Yeah.
I know, right?
So,
is this the idea for this? Like, as you do, I would think that writing fact, because as a true crime writer, you have to be, you know, I'm sure very strict about your facts, and I'm sure that you hear about it when you make a mistake.
Absolutely.
So do you find fiction to be a nice reprieve from that?
Well, you know, the fiction I wrote, the Poe novels in particular, you know, also, I mean, they required, you know, a lot of research, you know, because I tried to, you know, make them as accurate as possible. And they're also written in the first person. They're written in Poe's voice. So, you know, again, I mean, I've been, you know, steeped in 19th century American literature because, again, that's what I taught for 40 years. But it was actually, you know, in a way more difficult to do those novels than to do my nonfiction writing, partly because, you know, every day when I sat down to write, I would literally have to read, you know, enough of Poe to get his voice running in my head.
Right.
So, you know, that was very difficult. And so, yeah, I wouldn't say, you know, that it was a reprieve. In fact, I you know, kind of gave up the series partly because it was just very, you know, it was really difficult to keep it going in a lot of ways. So.
Yeah.
Now, your latest, your most recent release, Hell's Princess, which is the mystery of Belle Gunness, Butcher of Men. We talked a little bit about that the last time you were on, and I've since read it, and I love it. It's fascinating.
Thank you.
But could you for the new listeners tell us a little bit about Hell's Princess, the story behind it, and how that whole thing came to be for, well, for her and for you?
Well, Hell's Princess is about Belle Gunness, this Norwegian immigrant who came over to the United States in, I guess, 1881, something like that, the tail end of the 19th century. She moved to Chicago. She moved in with an older sister who had come here some years earlier. Very little is known about Belle's childhood. You know, she was just a completely obscure Norwegian peasant, you know, from very, very sort of hard scrabble background. And she came over here, you know, in her own way, you know, her own very twisted way, was pursuing the American dream. She married... you know, married a guy who she lived with for about 10 years, I guess, in Chicago. His name was Mads Sorensen. He was a night watchman at one of Chicago's department stores. And then he died under very peculiar circumstances. He, at her urging, had taken out a life insurance policy. I can't remember the exact amount. It was something like $2,000. And then she persuaded him to take out a larger insurance policy, I think $3,000. Anyway, there was one day in which both policies were in force. There was one day, the last day, when the earlier life insurance policy was in effect, was also the first day that the new life insurance policy was in effect. They overlapped on one day. By an odd coincidence, Mads came home from work feeling perfectly healthy and then ate dinner and then died. So Belle, you know, ended up inheriting $5,000, which was a considerable sum back then. And she purchased a farm in the town of LaPorte, Indiana. Then she promptly got married again, persuaded her new husband to take out a large life insurance policy. And then he, about just months after their marriage, 9 months or something, he died very mysteriously. He supposedly had left his shoes to dry by the kitchen stove, and when he went to get them, he bent down and stood up and supposedly knocked a large sausage grinder off the stove, which supposedly hit him on the head and killed him. So she came in... And then what Belle did was, you know, she's kind of been described as this early Craigslist killer. She started putting matrimonial ads in Scandinavian language newspapers throughout the Midwest and luring lonely Norwegian bachelors to her farmstead, instructing them all to bring their life savings with them. You know, supposedly they were going to be coming and, you know, meeting and marrying this wealthy Norwegian widow who would cook down-home Norwegian food for them. And, you know, she had this beautiful farm and, you know, they were going to bring their money and invest it in the operation. Anyway, she lured a string of these poor guys to her farm and murdered them and chopped up their bodies and buried them in her hog lot.
Wow.
At least a dozen.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, the law was kind of closing in on her when her farmhouse burned mysteriously to the ground. Searchers discovered in the charred remains of the cellar the torso of a woman who they assumed was Belle, and her three children. The children, you know, were all burned, you know, incinerated. The woman was dead. Everybody assumed, you know, that it was Belle and her children. They had died in this fire. The house had just caught fire somehow. She had gathered up her children, tried to save them, but they'd all died in the flames. The one anomaly was that the woman's corpse had no head. And
of course.
No head was
wow.
ever found.
Yeah.
Anyway, then, you know, soon after that, they started digging up these bodies, you know, in her backyard and realized, you know, that she was, well, they didn't call them serial killers back then, but, you know, they realized that she was this, you know, murder demon, as they would say, you know, who had this, again, who had this murder farm and who had lured all these guys there and poisoned them and chopped them up and buried them. And, you know, the big question that remained, part of the reason my book is called The Mystery of Belle Gunness is, you know, there has always been some question as to whether the corpse of the woman that was found in the charred remains of the house was that of Belle, because it didn't have a head. So they were never able to definitively prove it was Belle, or if it was some other woman that she lured to the farm and used as a decoy. So so that's the story in a nutshell. So,
right.
You know,
so
one of the
based on your information and what you learned about it, what is your deduction? Do you think it was her?
Well, you know, I was kind of hoping, because, you know, I do a lot of research, you know, when I do these books. I was kind of hoping that I would be able definitively to solve the mystery, which I was disappointed not to be able to. At one point, I thought I had. So I'm of two minds about it. After I write my books and publish my books, you know, I often hear from various readers who have interesting things to say. And I did get a message from a Los Angeles police investigator who specializes in arson cases. And he sent me actually quite an interesting analysis based mostly on information from my book. You know, he seemed convinced that, in fact, she had died in the fire. On the other hand, you know, there are many people I know who are equally convinced that she got away with the crime. There was a woman in 1930 in Los Angeles named Esther Carlson who poisoned some people, poisoned a husband. She was a housekeeper for a guy, and he died of poisoning. And there were many, many people convinced that she was Belle Gunness. again, so, you know, some questions have been raised about that. So it still remains an open question. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
It is. It is. So what is it that made you, I mean, how do you, there's so many to choose from. There's so much going on.
Yeah.
And even going through your catalog of books. In fact, I'd love to have you back just to focus on certain killers, different times seriously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is how do you decide, you know,
mm-hmm.
what you want to write about, and what was it about Belle Gunness that made you say choose her?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there are several considerations. One is, you know, I'm very interested in cases that at the time, you know, were so sensational that they attracted or generated, you know, this national and sometimes even international, you know, media coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that often have been forgotten. I mean, you know, outside of Indiana, you know, most people haven't heard of Belle Gunness, but literally her case was in newspapers, you know, all around the world. So, you know, I'm very interested in, you know, reviving those cases. And also, you know, there has to be enough material for me to write a book about. You know, there's a case, for example, that I'm interested in. Well, there's several cases I'm interested in, when I've been exploring them, I've discovered, for example, that there are no trial transcripts in existence. So, you know, I feel I couldn't really do justice to the story, you know, with that kind of,
uh-huh.
you know, with that kind of, with that. But the other thing is that, you know, it's not just the gruesomeness of the crime or the grisliness of the crime, you know, or the number of victims, you know, that are killed and tortured or whatever. You know, there has to be a story there. You know, there has to be interesting, there have to be interesting characters. You know, there has to be something interesting about the, you know, the killer, and there has to be interesting subsidiary characters. You know, basically what I'm doing when I'm writing these books, you know, is assembling hundreds, thousands really pages, you know, of very dry documents, psychiatric reports, and again, court transcripts and newspaper stories and so on and so forth, you know, and transforming them into a readable narrative. So in order to do that, I have to feel, again, that there is, you know, that there are these narrative elements, you know, these elements that make any kind of story interesting to a reader. Those are the considerations that enter into my choices.
Nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we are about out of time, but we'd love to have you back. I can't recommend these books enough. The first book of yours that I happened upon was called Fatal, and that we could do a
mm-hmm.
whole show on that just by itself. But before we let you go, could you tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and where they can get your books and all that good stuff?
Well, you know, Amazon. Obviously, and in terms of the ones I mentioned earlier, those Kindle singles, you know, they're only available on Amazon. You know, I myself basically now buy everything on Amazon. You know, if I need dental floss,
right.
I need it on Amazon.
Yeah.
So, you know, but, you know, bookstores,
yeah.
you know, bookstores, brick-and-mortar bookstores carry my books. I do have a website. I've never actually gone on it, but it exists, haroldschechter.com. the usual places, you know, Google. You can go on Google, see photographs of me and stuff like that. So.
All right. It's a pleasure having you always, and I'm serious about that. I'd love to have you back and just
mm-hmm.
focus on some of these.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about, and there's cases I've never even heard of, and I'm like, how have I not heard of this? So I hope you're open to that, because we'd love to have you back.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for asking me.
All right. You are welcome. And thank you for being on. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next week, we wish you haunted nights.
And sweet screams.
Thank you for listening.
Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.